Greetings, Hamburger Kids. Today is the second part of our mini-series talking and discussing Ukrainian economy. In the previous part, we had a very nice discussion about the Institute, IER, which I have second member today here with me. Nice to have you here, Irina.
Thank you.
And the last time we were talking about your institute and the general, let's say, business environment during the main phase of the war and how Ukrainian businesses are coping with the situation. Today, we would like to talk more about infrastructure, especially about electricity, gas, and transport. You know, maybe the very first question, because the hottest topic in the past months regarding Ukrainian economy infrastructure was the electricity supply, because of the wave of attacks on the power plants and the transmission stations. What's the situation now?
Can I just give a short overview before I go to the current situation? So I have a couple of points that I wanted to make. First is that the Ukrainian energy system is severely damaged. Like we had 271 hits during the last heating period. It's a lot. We had 75% of our heat power plants damaged. The task for the Ukrainian government during this period is to try to repair all of that and try to bring it up to like full capacity. Unfortunately, it's not doable to bring it to restore as much as we can. So right now, the Ukrainian energy system is in its repair and maintenance mode. Like we see the power blocks of nuclear power plants reaching on and off because they go to repair and they come back from repair. So the energy generated in Ukraine, it's sometimes we have deficit and the government warns the citizens to try to consume less in the evenings where there is a peak of electricity consumption. And it warns that with continuing attacks of Russia on infrastructure and continuing repairs, that there may be power shortages even during the summertime. Next, another task for the government right now is to try to protect the power plants with some kind of, I don't know, concrete walls or something. Not much information about that for obvious security reasons, but the government says that they're doing and the job is on schedule. And the third task is to replenish the storages. And here we're talking about coal storages and gas storages, oil storages. So right now we have the latest figures is that Ukraine has 1.5 million tons of coal. And the goal is to have at least 1.8 million tons. So we are nearly there. And as for gas, Ukraine has in storages 11.7 billion cubic meters, and the goal is to have 14.7 million cubic meters. And here again, the government says that we are on track, that this goal will be achieved. But the biggest problem right now with the electricity is that there are no reserves because the infrastructure is so much damaged that if anything like big happens, we won't have any leeway, any free capacity to use. Yeah.
So you were talking mainly about the fuel for power plants, right?
If we're talking about coal, yes, that's for power plants. If we're talking about gas, it's both for consumption by power plants and consumption by industry and households.
Currently, are there any outages of electricity in the country or it's stable for now?
Right now, no, we don't have any outages, but we do have warnings from the government to try to decrease consumption in the evening. And as far as I understand, that the deficit is covered by electricity imports.
Are people complying with these requests to lower the consumption, or is it working?
It's like yes and no. Like the numbers say that some days the consumption decreases, but in some days it doesn't. But of course, it's also dependent not on the compliance by the population, but also on the weather. If we have like higher temperatures outside, even if the population might try to consume less, it means that the ACs are working, the conditioners are working, so the consumption increases.
Okay, let's move to the question of gas, which is partly also a question for the power because it's used in gas power plants, but also for the winter and for industrial processes. Who is currently the main supplier of gas to Ukraine?
That's a good question, because before the war, the biggest supplier was Russia and Belarus. And right now we bring gas from Romania, from Bulgaria, Poland, other neighboring countries. And I don't know if this is like non-Russian gas. It may be that we just changed the intermediary, but the producer of gas may still be the same. And of course, there is a small portion of gas that Ukraine produces itself. We have a Ukrainian state gas company, Ukrgazvydobyvanie, and the company says that it's increasing its production of gas, and it has plans to increase even more. It's a small portion, but
as far as I know, but there are theoretically quite a big supplies of natural gas in Ukraine. Is it possible to develop them in the near future?
Out of the volume that Ukraine consumed, it produced, I would say, around 60-70% of that. So it's not like 100% of gas Ukraine imports. So the fraction of imports wasn't that big. And Ukraine can cover it by imports. If whether we can produce all of the gas we need, we should look at both the consumption side and the supply side. So we are both right now increasing our production and unfortunately decreasing our consumption because of the destruction of Ukrainian industry and decrease in the population.
I was maybe more talking about in upcoming years, if it's possible to explore more gas fields and maybe open new gas wells, because I believe there is some potential for new gas production in the country, but obviously you would need quite a lot of capital for this. Maybe are there already some investors potentially looking into extraction of the natural resources in the upcoming years?
Yes, the potential is definitely there, but the problem is that those potential new gas fields are close to the fighting lines. They are in the east of Ukraine and they are in the Black Sea. So right now, of course, there can be no talks about gas exploration in the Black Sea because Russia allowed that. And as for It depends on where that particular territory is. Right now, what the Ukrainian companies are focusing on is to developing old fields and try to extract as much as possible from them. We hear in news that the fields that were deemed with low potential are reopened and new technologies are used and they are somehow extracting more gas than before. And also the Ukrainian companies are digging deeper. Like the latest news were that the Ukrgazvydobyvanie opened a new well, which was 6,600 meters deep. It's the deepest well for this company.
Okay, and what about the third fuel we did not mention? It's oil. I know that quite a few refineries were hit and potentially destroyed. What's the situation with fuels in the country?
As with oil, this is the biggest problem is that Ukraine no longer produces its own oil. The two big refineries it had were damaged and they are not operating. Even before the war, around 90% of oil was imported. So that is a problem right now. But the numbers say that actually the consumption of oil and the fuels in Ukraine are at the pre-war levels. So all that volume that Ukraine consumed before the war, Ukraine continues to consume and it managed to import all of that volume.
If you go now to a petrol station in Kyiv or maybe even closer to the front, there's no problem to buy fuel for an ordinary citizen.
In Kyiv, definitely no problem because I am right now in Kyiv. I don't see any lines on the fueling stations and I don't see in the news any like news that there are problems on the east. So I guess the situation is stable there. The slight issue might be that in July, the Ukrainian government returned the excise tax on fuels. It abolished this tax for the wartime, so there was no tax for about a year. And right now it put it back because the budget needs money. And that means that the price of fuel increased in Ukraine slightly. But as for the actual supply of fuel on the fueling stations, there's no shortage.
So we already touched the transport. So let's talk a bit about transportation. We know the situation with the Black Sea ports that they are generally not operating. What about connection to Danube? I remember that a few months ago that Ukraine broadened some canal to the Danube Delta, if I remember correctly. Is it used? Is it a good connection or is it just like something very small?
Yes, it is used. It's the canal, in Ukrainian, it's Bystre. This canal, it's an alternative canal to the Romanian canal Sulina. It's definitely used and Ukraine not only just reopened it, it's deepened. So it dug out, like it increased the depths, which allowed bigger ships to come. The Danube ports cannot replace the seaports of Ukraine. The capacity is not comparable at all. And after Russia exited the grain initiative, it started shelling those Danube ports as well. And recent news are that actually the ships are afraid to enter those ports because the port Reni, which is on the Danube River, was also shelled recently. And the ships there were like under danger of, because there was a fire in the port. So the ship owners are afraid that fire can catch their ships. And the Danube ports are also one of the major ports for fuel imports. So you can imagine what will happen if the rocket hits the port with a fuel tanker in it. So that's why there is like this indirect effect on the Danube ports, even though they were not part of that big grain trade under the Black Sea Grain Initiative. They were an alternative route and they are also under fire right now.
Yeah, I remember. It's the port which is very close to the Romanian border, right?
Exactly. Like, yes.
Yeah. I guess it's the problem is also with the insurance about the with the ships that if you get hit or damaged by war hostility that the insurance doesn't pay you, so that's probably very very scary for the ship owners to go into such zone. Ships are definitely a problem. What about rail? Rail, I suppose, except the problem of capacity, obviously, is probably now the main route for goods in and out of Ukraine.
Rail and roads. Rail is one of the major modes of transportation for grain right now. Everybody knows what to do, and the grain is kind of tradable commodity, which is kind of easy to handle. Other goods like imports of electronics, for example, they of course they don't use rail; they mostly use roads, and the imports is done by trucks. About rail, I can say that the biggest obstacle here is the different rail gauge in Ukraine and in neighboring countries. So this means that the train has to stop to reload its goods or to change the wheels, basically, and then it can continue its route. So it creates delays, and it creates lines at the border. And of course, it's much more difficult to increase the capacity of a railway station, because for that you will need to build additional tracks, you will need additional locomotives and the wagons. So it's more costly than just to build a new road.
I remember there were some maybe only theoretical talks about building a European gauge railway in Ukraine, at least in some part. Is it something like this considered to technically change at least part of the railway network, or in this state it's not really an option for the upcoming months or years?
For the upcoming months, no. But for the upcoming years, the projects are there. There are plans like that. And recently I saw the plan from, I think it was commissioned by the European Commission on how to develop the railway system and where to build in Ukraine the European railway gauge network. So for the first cities to be connected are also, of course, those that are closer to the border, like Lviv or Chernivtsi or Uzhhorod. And then the major goal is to connect Kyiv. So this connection of European border Lviv and Kyiv, this is one of the main routes that are in project right now. And also I should mention that there are routes of Ukrainian, like railway routes going into European countries. And those are also used quite extensively right now. For example, we have a broad gauge connection to Košice, or we have a connection to some Polish cities. Everything that cannot be used in this way is obviously used.
Yeah, we have one big changing station for the goods in Chirna na Tiso, which is near Košice, which was a sleepy hollow and currently invigorated, refreshed by the inflow of trains from Ukraine. But definitely, it has its limits. And what about maybe border crossings? I guess it has been problem and still is problem in terms of waiting times and the duty and customs bureaucracy. Has it improved?
It did improve. First, some new border crossing points were opened. They start at not full capacity. They only allow to pass like empty trucks to speed up the process, but it's a big improvement on other border crossing points, because it actually extracts those empty trucks from the general line. And like gradually they are brought to full capacity by allowing loaded trucks to pass, and then the trucks that bring fuels and other dangerous goods as well. And this is one way. And another way is that the Ukrainian government introduced an electronic line. It's a system, it's in Ukrainian, it's called e-cherga, e-line, if we translate it into English. It's an electronic system where the drivers can register and can specify what border crossing point they want to cross. They put their vehicle number, and they put the good that they are bringing And then they are given an approximate time where they can come and cross the border. So the system was made operational on all 16 border crossing points a couple of months ago. So right now it's not already in the testing mode, but still it needs some time to stabilize, you know, that everybody learns how to use it. And we know how many drivers and trucks we have. So right now, as far as I can see from the driver chats that I'm reading, the drivers are in favor of it, and they say that it helps them. It doesn't help to reduce the line, obviously, but it helps to make their life easier because they can predict when they should go to the border, and it helps them to plan their activities.
The drivers from the European Union, are they not afraid to come to Ukraine? Are there still European trucks coming to Ukraine, or is mainly all in the hands of Ukrainian drivers and Ukrainian trucks?
No, European drivers are coming. If we just look at this information system, the first version was in Ukrainian, but then there were a lot of complaints that Polish drivers, they also need to use the system. So there was a version made in Polish, and now we have three more versions in Hungarian, in Romanian, I guess, and in, I forgot the third language, but it obviously shows that not just Ukrainians use the system and not just Ukrainians are crossing the border.
Very good. So hopefully the next language is Slovak.
Yeah, and, hopefully, yeah.
And maybe a question like, oh, I know that currently there are no flights except military missions, but is there any talk about renewing at least some kind of cargo flights, for example, to the Užhorod airport, which is very close to the Slovak border and probably should be reasonably safe?
There are talks. There are always talks and hopes that at least one of the airports can resume its operation. And actually, the port that is mentioned is not Užhorod, but Lviv, because it's bigger and has bigger capacity. But there are also immediate concerns that once Ukraine announces that, again, Lviv airport is operational, the next rocket will be there. So it's really dangerous. With Užhorod airport, Užhorod airport, even before the war, had its own issues with crossing the Slovak airspace and the need to get this intergovernmental agreements on how to use that airspace. And also it's a small airport with small capacity, and its runway is not up to standard. So it will need some works to be done before it can be opened. Right now, I don't see any talks like in the expert circles about Užhorod airport.
These are pretty tough times regarding transport and infrastructure, but also it was quite astonishing resilience. For example, when we take the electricity network, that it was really targeted to be destroyed and knocked out, and it still works. So do you think if the war goes on for, let's say, 1-2 years more, that the infrastructure can hold together?
I think yes, because as war goes on, we learn how to protect, we learn how to react quickly, and we learn how to be flexible. If we're talking about the energy infrastructure, the biggest issue of Ukrainian energy system is that it relies on big power plants that supply a lot of electricity through high voltage lines. So it's all done in big volumes. So if a rocket hits one big power plant, then it's a big impact on the whole system. So what we have to do now is try to decentralize it and to build a lot of small power plants which can supply a small village or even like a couple of buildings. And that way, Ukraine will be less reliant on these big Soviet-style power plants. So I'm quite optimistic that the Ukrainian infrastructure will hold. Of course, we will need any help we can get. And we are very grateful for the help that is coming from our partners and our neighbors, especially in the electricity sector, because as you know, that equipment is it's huge and it costs a lot of money and it needs a lot of time to produce. So the help that we got last winter when the power units were searched on all our neighbors and this that like transmission units were supplied to Ukraine. And with that help and with ingenuity and with adaptability of the system, I think we can manage.
Is there initiative also from the bottom? I mean, can you see people or companies building photovoltaics or buying batteries or creating their own sources of electricity?
Definitely, that's what we saw last winter. The first reaction was to buy diesel generators because they are smaller and they are easier to bring and to buy fuel for them. But bigger companies are planning and constructing their own power supply units. Some of them use gas, some of them use solar power or biofuel. It depends on the what kind of industry it is and where it is situated, so what kind of fuel is available. So yeah, we do see those kind of projects all over the country, yes.
So definitely, at least in terms of electricity, the infrastructure will emerge sooner or later, much more decentralized and much more anti-fragile and stronger. Yeah. Irina, it was great talking to you. Hope you have a nice day, and I hope we will talk and meet in the future, and we'll discuss the reconstruction and the growth in your country. And I'm also looking forward for the next part with your colleague talking about Ukrainian economy. And for now, again, we are very happy to have you here, and see you soon.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me, and it was nice talking to you as well, Martin. Thank you.
Bye. Bye-bye.